If you have a copy of God's Word with you this morning, can we turn to Nehemiah, the book of Nehemiah, please, in chapter 4. The book of Nehemiah, chapter 4, together this morning. But Nehemiah chapter 4, and we're going to commence to read at the first verse this morning. We'll just take time to read the entire chapter to get the picture. Maybe a familiar story for you this morning, but we want to think about the giant of discouragement this morning. We want to see what lessons we can learn from Nehemiah. So these are the words of Nehemiah speaking. But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth. Wroth just means jealous or to burn with anger. He was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. And he spake before his brethren and the army of Samaria and said, "What do these feeble Jews? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish which are burned?" Now Tobiah the Ammonite was by him, and he said, "Even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall even break down their stone wall. Hear, O our God, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their own head, and give them up for a prey in the land of captivity. And cover not their iniquity, and let not their sin be blotted out from before thee, for they have provoked thee to anger before the builders. So build we the wall, and all the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work." But it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up, and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were very wroth, and conspired all of them to come together and to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto our God and set a watch against them day and night because of them. And Judah said, "The strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we are not able to build the wall." And our adversary said, "They shall not know, neither see, till we come in the midst among them and slay them and cause the work to cease." And it came to pass that when the Jews which dwelt by them came and said unto us 10 times, "From all places whence ye shall return unto us, they will be upon you." Therefore set I in the lower places behind the wall, and on the higher places I even set the people after their families with their swords and their spears and their bows. And I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, "Be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons, and your daughters, and your wives, and your houses." And it came to pass, when our enemies heard that it was known unto us, and God had brought their counsel to naught, that we returned all of us to the wall, and everyone unto his work. And it came to pass from that time forth that the half of my servants wrought in the work, and the other half of them held both the spears and the shields and the bows and the habergeons, and the rulers were behind all the house of Judah. They which builded on the wall, and they that bare burdens with those that laid it, every one of with one of his hands wrought in the work, and with the other hand held a weapon. For the builders, every one had his sword girded by his side, and so builded. And he that sounded the trumpet was by me. And I said unto the nobles, and to the rulers, and to the rest of the people, "The work is great and large, and we are separated upon the wall, one far from another. In what place, therefore, ye hear the sound of the trumpet, resort ye hither unto us. Our God shall fight for us." So we labored in the work, and half of them held the spears from the rising of the morning till the stars appeared. Likewise, at the same time, said I unto the people, "Let everyone with his servant lodge within Jerusalem, that in the night they may be a guard to us and labor on the day." So neither I, nor my brethren, nor my servants, nor the men of the guard which followed me, none of us put off our clothes, saving that every one put them off for washing. Amen. And we know the Lord will add a blessing to the reading of his precious word. The giant of discouragement. Dr. David Jeremiah tells a story about Larry. Now, Larry was from Los Angeles, and I'm sure You will agree with me as I tell this little illustration. Larry was the most unfortunate man maybe that ever lived. See, many years ago, Larry got up in the morning and he went out to work. And he had one of those days that maybe we've all had where if something was going to go wrong, it went wrong for Larry. Well, he went out to work and unfortunately he got electrocuted at work. When he was in hospital, the battle raged because in America, the health system's very different. You have to pay for your own care over there. The battle raged with the lawyers over the price of his health care. And well, when it was all said and done, his wife ran off with the lawyer. And then after he got out of hospital, he was driving home and he hadn't driven for so long, he managed to crash the car. After he crashed the car, when the police came to help him out, when the police cleared off after sorting out who was involved, the robbers came along and took what was left of his wallet. Poor Larry got home and such were the bills over that what he had to pay for both the divorce and then obviously for everything else. He'd very little left and the house got repossessed. And he lived alone for many years. And yet Larry used to tell people, there's always hope. There's always hope. Now, I'm not sure if I had faced what Larry had to face, if I would have been able to say, there's always hope. I think I would have been away with it a long time ago. But I'm sure there's some here this morning, one here this morning, who is maybe discouraged. There's many things in life that could cause us to be discouraged. What is discouragement? How could we define the very word discouragement? Well, I'm no English professor, but it's really made up of two words, dis and then courage. And that word dis means just simply to take away. So you think about it, take away courage. So when somebody is discouraged, you're talking to somebody who has had their courage or their confidence taken away. And many things can do that. I wonder this morning, are you here or are you listening online and you have been robbed, so to speak, of your courage? Robbed of maybe a spiritual courage in terms of how you go about your spiritual life. And maybe things have happened. You've been discouraged in your Christian walk and you've had that courage taken away. Very often discouragement is like a spirit. And when it comes to do the right thing, you've little or no result. It's one of the devil's best tools to try and annoy God's people, to make you feel bad about yourself, to hinder your progress and to stop you from going on with the Lord. Spiritual discouragement is real. Spiritual discouragement is damaging. Maybe you're here this morning and maybe once you had that vibrant, confident spiritual walk. You had a tireless work ethic in the local assembly. You pushed on with the work. You walked well with the Lord. But for some reason, maybe not even your own fault, maybe circumstances beyond your control, maybe people beyond your control, and you've been discouraged. You've had that spiritual energy zapped, so to speak. It's been short-circuited. The work ethic's now gone, and your walk is more of a stumble at best. And maybe, if we're honest, we just sit down most of the time, spiritually speaking. In Nehemiah chapter 4, just to set the scene this morning, we have, one commentator put it, a lovely recollection, maybe like personal diary of Nehemiah as he worked through his ministry. A remarkable man of God. And of course, some of you, as you might know, the Lord had imposed 70 years of darkness upon Israel as a result of their continual disobedience to his word. Nevertheless, Nehemiah and his contemporary Ezra, they were raised up, if you like, and they had a very important role to play. And they were ministering comfort, and they were trying to restore that faithful remnant as they returned from exile in Babylon. And as they traveled to the unknown territory, they left behind them, of course, that trail of destruction in the city of Jerusalem. Now, the temple had been rebuilt, but the walls and the gates of that city, Jerusalem, were in a state of total disrepair. And that's where we come to this morning about rebuilding the walls. There was 70 years of neglect on the walls. If you leave any property for even 7 years, let alone 70 years, it's going to fall into some sort of disrepair, isn't it? And the walls had left the city of Jerusalem unfortified. It was vulnerable. It was vacant, if you like. It was open to attack. It's no surprise, as we read in Nehemiah 1:3, that said that the people were in great affliction and indeed reproach. And this is where Nehemiah, he comes in. He was the organizer, if you like, behind getting the walls rebuilt. Now, what do the walls symbolize? Well, they're symbolic of the work. They're symbolic of the work of maybe a local assembly. And so this morning, my message is twofold. We can face discouragement both on a corporate level. We can look out around about us. We can see the world in which we live and all the things that happen, all the laws that are passed and all the world events. And it's very easy to get down and to get discouraged. And also then personally, we can be down and discouraged with maybe things happening in our own lives. So we are all building something. Whether we're building a home life, a family life, we're building a marriage, we're building whatever it is, we're also building when it comes to the Lord's work. So I want to talk today about a few things. I want to think about the scourge of discouragement in the first few verses this morning. Chapter 4 and verses 1 through 6. Cast your eye to chapter 1 again. Look what happens. The scourge of discouragement. You see, from outside, the work was being belittled. We see that our friend Sanballat, wonder where they got those names from. But Sanballat, he mocked, he was wroth, he was angry, he burned with anger, and he mocked the Jews for their efforts to even begin to rebuild the walls. Then in verse 3, he continues his insults, or his friend Tobiah the Ammonite, and he said basically, I'll paraphrase verse 3, but even if they put a little fox, and I'm sure you've all witnessed what a fox is like, there's not an awful lot to them. And he said, look, even if a little fox goes up on those walls, the little fox will knock them down, such as the feeble efforts of the Jews. Now, maybe this morning, before we go any further, maybe you're building at something, maybe you have a work, maybe you're working at something in the home, in the workplace itself, and maybe to other people it seems feeble, it seems weak, and just it could blow in at any time, and even a little fox could destroy that work. Will you be encouraged this morning? Because as we'll see, whenever the Lord's on your side, it doesn't matter your limitations. When the Lord's on your side, you definitely have the majority. Then cast your eye down to verse 6. I want you to see something. Nehemiah says, so we built the wall, and all the wall was joined together unto the half thereof. And I think this is a lovely phrase. For the people had a mind to work. The people had a mind to work. Mind can be translated heart. The people had a heart to work. They had a heart to work. I wonder this morning, do we have a heart for this place? Do we have a heart for this assembly? Do we have a heart to work and build at this assembly spiritually? Elders, do we have the heart to work at leading and building spiritually? Deacons, do you have the heart? Do you have the mind to work at building at the fabric of this place, practically maintaining the fabric so the elders are able to maintain the spiritual fabric? I wonder, do we have that mind to work? I think that's a beautiful little phrase. If we don't have the heart, if we don't have the mind, don't be surprised then if discouragement sets in with yourself and then spreads about. And that's what this passage is all about. So much damage was done from outside and also from inside. So much damage can be done by discouragement more than any other thing. Think again of the definition of discouragement. In the secular, it's taking away your courage, taking away your spiritual confidence. In the spiritual, it's exactly the same. You just add in spiritual. It's taking away of your spiritual confidence, your spiritual courage. See, even the very best people get discouraged. Did you know that this morning? Look at verse 10. And Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed. Now, who was discouraged and what's so significant about Judah? What's so significant about Judah? Well, Judah, the chief tribe, the dominant tribe, the, as we would say, the creme de la creme, he got discouraged. He was a dominant leader. He was a confident leader. And yet, even he said to Nehemiah, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed. Discouragement had even set in with the boys leading the show, so to speak. See, it tells us this morning, nobody is immune from being discouraged at all. The best, we often say the best of men are what? Men at best. And the best of women are at best women. So anybody can be discouraged. Any servant of God can be discouraged. Anybody who is a Christian this morning, you have all faced. I'm sure if I asked you at the door, you could tell me instances of when you've been discouraged, either in personal life or even in the Lord's work. That's the first thing this morning, the scourge of discouragement. Secondly, I want you to see something very quickly here in 7 through 11. The source of discouragement. Where does discouragement come from? And how does it impact our lives? We can see a number of things here, about four things that we can observe that serve to discourage God's people in the building of the work, or indeed in your personal life. You see, the people were worked against, they were worn out, and they were weighed down, and they were wrought up. And let me tell you, if you face even one of those things, if you're worn out, if you're weighed down, if you're wrought up, you'll be discouraged. But the people here, the Jews here, when they're rebuilding the walls, they faced all these things combined. And maybe some of you here this morning face all these things combined. Let's work through them very quickly. Look at verse 7 and 8. I want you to see working against. Look at verse 7. And when it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were very wroth. They burned in anger. They were jealous. And look at what they decided to do in verse 8. And they conspired. And what does conspire mean? It means to come together, to form a clique, to tie their efforts together. It wasn't just that they heard that the walls were going up and they were just angry about it and nothing happened, but their anger turned to action. And they came together to try and work against the Jews at this time. So whenever the boys heard the plans, their mockery turned to conspiracy. They were jealous. They burned with anger. They came together to hinder the work. That was the first problem they had to deal with. The Jews had people outside that were trying to work against them. Then I want you to see in verse 10, they were worn out. And Judah said, "The strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish so that we were not able to build the wall." Now, what does it mean for decay? Now, we've all got teeth, I hope. Maybe some of you have few less teeth than others, but we'll not go down that route. Maybe some of you are able to put your own teeth in the morning, and that might be an advantage. I don't know, maybe it saves you money, maybe it doesn't, but we'll not go there. Don't sing too hard on the last hymn, or you might see the teeth where you don't want to see them. But all of us know what it is to go in and 2 sound, 3 sound, 4 sound, and then they'll say, I don't know, they come up with all these terms, I don't know, D1 cavity or something like this here. The heart rate starts to go if you're anything like me, because I've shared with you before, I don't really like the dentist. But what happens when decay sets into your teeth? Well, it's going to end up in pain, doesn't it? It's going to end up in soreness, potentially. You might have to get the teeth pulled if you really let them go too far. But enamel is one of the strongest materials on the planet, and yet we as people, maybe those who are predisposed to the red tin with Coke on the label of it, we are able to find ways to dissolve that really strong material. And let me tell you, when decay sets in, weakness sets in. Remember, I asked a dentist one time, I don't know how we got onto this subject, but I said, what happens, you know, if you lose a tooth or you get a tooth pulled, can you not just leave the gap? Why would you need a bridge? Just, I was curious about it. And she said to me, well, the problem is each tooth sort of works with each other, and they strengthen the one each side of it, and the other side and the other side. So if you take one tooth out, it weakens the two on the other side. Folks, it's exactly the same when it comes to the Christian walk. We have to be so careful what we consume, lest decay sets in, lest weakness sets in. And then if something happens that we need major surgery, so to speak, with our teeth, we could weaken the teeth around about us. The people were wore out. They were working hard, just like some of you. They were working hard, they were slogging away at a particular work, in this case building the work of the walls. Maybe you got really tired, they got wore out right in the middle of the job. Now, maybe it wasn't that they were tired, they were maybe just psychologically tired, as we will see all the different threats that were coming against them. It would cause you to lose your energy, and halfway through they started to get tired. They'd started to get discouraged, they had lost that zest for work. Verse 6 tells us that the wall was halfway built. Cast your eye back to verse 6. So we built the wall, and all the wall was joined together unto the half thereof. The walls were half built. Now, the start of any work, if you're going to build a house, if some of you have built maybe your own house, or you've watched a house being built, it's all exciting, you know, at the planning stage, and the founds go in and the first few blocks go up. But then maybe halfway through, when there's problems and you have to figure something else out, or something's going to cost a wee bit more than maybe you initially planned for, boy, discouragement can set in. But whenever you get over all those things, and then, as we say, you're on the home straight with maybe a building project, boy, you can see it all coming together. You can see maybe where you're going to live, and boy, the excitement sets in. But halfway through is very dangerous. And could I say very sensitively to you this morning, middle age is often a time when discouragement sets in. Little thing about middle age, do you know a lot of men and women get into difficulty when they're in middle age? We hear about midlife crises. We think that I never understand is you ask a man who's maybe 52 years of age and you say, what age are you? He says, well, I'm middle aged now, I'm 52. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't really hear of an awful lot of 104-year-old men. So if you're over 50 this morning and you claim you're middle aged, well, I don't know, you're very optimistic, because what is it, 3 score year and 10, maybe 8 of you for fortunate. So really middle age is 35 to 40, just to depress you all totally this morning, but I'm not at 35 yet, so I'm not middle aged. But let me tell you this, maybe this morning you're worn out physically, maybe the demands of a job. Physically, maybe the demands of a job or what you're doing, maybe some other responsibility. And see, if you're wore out physically, you're prone to discouragement. You're prone to getting it tight. And when you're tired, you know what it's like when you're tired. You're not thinking the same way and you make maybe the wrong decisions and it's just not good at all. Maybe you're worn out this morning. But then I want you to see something else very quickly. They were weighed down. Look at verse 10. And the Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed. There is much rubbish so that we are not able to build the wall. And there is much rubbish. The people were not only worn out, but they were distracted by seeing the problem rather than the provision. They saw the problem, which was the rubbish, rather than the provision, which was the Lord. You see, the bearers had a job to do. They were told to build the wall. Boy, we had a president, and he used to love that phrase, didn't he? Build the wall, build the wall. They were told to build the wall. But what happened? They were hindered by the rubbish. And the rubbish that they witnessed around about them, that swamped their minds and it controlled their ability to do anything other than to be discouraged. Isn't it amazing how all these years later, after Nehemiah penned these words under the inspiration of God, that we're still in the same situation today? Isn't there so much rubbish in all of our lives? And in fact, the rubbish takes away our perspective and all we see is the problem rather than the provision. Verse 10 says, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed and there is much rubbish that we're not able to build the wall. Do you know one of the hardest jobs is not actually building, it's actually clearing up, it's cleaning up. Sometimes we have to remove the rubbish before we can build. You know that, even round about the house. There's no point, you know, setting up the house for somebody to come over for lunch or for tea if there's everything everywhere already. Boy, it would just be a complete disaster. Same with building, you have to clear the site. See, sometimes the hard part of it is we have to do a little bit of throwing out. Now, I know in this green day and generation in which we are living, what is it we are told to do? Reduce, reuse, and recycle. Yes, I can hear you. Recycle. Reduce, reuse, and recycle. Can I tell you, contrary to that maybe well-advised advice from the government, Christians should not recycle their spiritual rubbish. It needs to be thrown out. We need to throw out that spiritual rubbish. Get rid of it. Throw it away. That's the hard part, isn't it? Most of us don't maybe want to do that. You see, we don't want to do the legwork. We don't want to do the dirty work, the hard work of cleaning it up. We like maybe the work that's recognized. You know, unless our name's on it, forget about it. That's the harsh reality of life, isn't it? But look at the positive this morning. Nehemiah was talking about literal physical debris. And you see, in the work of any assembly, I'm talking spiritual work and practical work, man, there's a lot of rubbish that has to be removed before we can build on a proper foundation, before we can build on a sure foundation. There's maybe theological rubbish that we have to sort out. There's maybe moral rubbish that we have to sort out. My, there's maybe even relationship rubbish that we have to sort out with our fellow believers. Could I put it like this? Is there some rubbish between you and somebody else in this assembly? I don't know. And you've never really sorted it out. And if you're honest, it just gets recycled time and time again. And my, whenever we do that, nothing really can ever go forward. It's sat and it's festered in the bitterness and resentment. God can't build on rubbish like that. Look deep within this morning. Let's not look around at others and say, oh, that's a good wee word for him. That's a good wee word for her. Look within ourselves this morning. Examine yourself. Search me, O God. Some of us can't even see maybe our own weaknesses. But then I want to think about this. We have to build on good ground. It's important to build on good ground, isn't it? I remember years ago down in County Fermanagh, just out the Sligo Road, where my late grandfather lived, there was a number of apartments that went up a number of years ago. Maybe you've read about this. And they didn't pile down far enough, or they got the calculations wrong, and lovely apartments went up, and they went for probably nice sums of money at the time, and everybody moved in, everybody was happy, and then all of a sudden the cracks began to appear, and well, they weren't just settlement cracks, but they were very significant ones, and the next thing, the surveyors were out, and they had to all go away. I've told you before, a number of weeks ago, whenever I was studying in the back room, our friend Mr. Bradley is obviously expanding over there, and there was a couple of weeks, I didn't know what I was going to do. I thought I was going to have to get some sort of cover from a cup of tea, because my tea was jumping about half an inch off the table for about 2 weeks, the amount of piles that were going in over there. And then I understand that this was maybe an old sand pit or something like that, and the time passed. And what if Mr. Bradley had put up that without the proper foundation? Boy, it would have looked a wonderful building, but then after a couple of weeks or maybe months, what's going to happen? The whole place is going to come in around him. It's the same spiritually, folks. We have to make sure that we're building on the solid ground. We have to get rid of the rubbish or pile through it to make sure that we can build. But then I want you to see in verse 11, they weren't only worn out, they weren't only weighed down, but they were wrought up. Look at verse 11. And our adversary said, they shall not know, neither see, till we come in the midst among them and slay them, cause the work to cease. You see, there was this conspiracy against God's people. All these people got together and they were energized by the devil. The enemy was coming to them, and they're saying, as verse 11, I'll just paraphrase it, they'll not know, they'll not see us coming, but boy, we're coming for them. Can you imagine that if you were trying to work away at these walls and people were chattering about this, so we're going to get you, we're going to come for you? Boy, you wouldn't be that encouraged, would you? You would be in a state of perpetual discouragement, and it would be a very difficult thing. Sometime when you least expect it, we're going to get you. My, if you live with that in your life, you're going to be discouraged. The old enemy just knows how to discourage us, doesn't he? Adrian Rogers, the great American preacher, he's in the glory now, but Adrian Rogers says, I want to tell you what kind of friend you have in the devil. If you were in quicksand, he'd come along and pat you on the head. That's the sort of friend that you have in the devil. He'd come along and pat you on the head. Just when you think, like old Larry at the start, when things can't get any worse, the old enemy will come along and he'll make it 10 times worse. They were wrought up. Now maybe this morning you're here. Maybe you're worn out, you're weighed down, you're wrought up, you're caught up and worry and fear about the future, and you're discouraged. You're worried about your job. You're worried about your finances. The cost of living crisis that we hear about, it's starting to bite in your home. Maybe you're worried about your marriage. Maybe you're worried about your kids. Maybe you're worried about the security going forward in the future. What if Russia doesn't stop at Ukraine? And what if happens if Finland does join NATO and all these things? There's a lot to discourage us. When these things happen, it's hard not to be discouraged. Then look at verse 12, I want you to see within themselves. I want you to see this. Look at verse 12. So we're moving from outside the camp to inside the camp. And it came to pass that when the Jews which dwelt by them came, they said unto us, and note the frequency of this, 10 times, from all places whence ye shall return unto us, they will be upon you. Did you know, or do you know, that there's some of God's people here in this story that helped the enemy? They aided the enemy. There's people from within were starting to be discouragers to the people. Look at verse 12 very, very carefully. I'm paraphrasing it again. But some of the Jews which lived among them, some of their own people, came to them 10 times and said, they're going to get you, you know. Thanks for the reminder, but they're going to get you. Don't bother about those walls. Boy, them boys are going to get you. What a principle in Scripture that's maybe sadly so true in our churches today. The threat to discourage from within is very dangerous. We have the negative Normans and we have the pessimistic Paulas. I hope none of you are called Norman or Paula this morning, but you know what I mean. We have them around about. Everything's a drag. The worst thing that's going to happen is always going to happen. There's always something wrong. And they'll tell anybody that will listen how bad it is in their church. All the problems that they have in their church, boy, they know best and they'll tell it. Let me tell you this morning. Is it the mark of somebody who's spiritually mature to speak negatively outside the camp? Is it the mark of somebody who's spiritually mature to speak negatively about the work in the assembly outside the camp? Maybe talking to people that aren't even in membership. I don't like this, I don't like that. We should be doing this, we should be doing that. Is that the mark of somebody that's spiritually mature? I think it's the mark of somebody that's maybe spiritually deficient. And the problem with that is the devil is able to use you as a puppet for his discouragement of God's people. It's as simple as that. And maybe even sadder than that again, maybe some are the devil's puppets and we can't even see it. We can't even see it. May the Lord open our eyes this morning. You are, as somebody once said to me, you're as useful as a drink of water to a drowning man. That's all the devil's puppets are. I heard two pastors discussing about church committees. So they weren't Baptist. But they were discussing church committees. One pastor said, have you any committees in your church? Any standing committees? The other pastor says, oh, yes, I have a standing committee. Six stand, six lay down. He says, well, we even have what we call the water bucket committee. The water bucket committee. The other boy said, do you have a problem with the roof? The other pastor smiled quite wryly and he says, no, no, the water bucket committee, they're the boys that come along whenever we've something to do for God, when we've got a good idea for God, and they just pour cold water all over the idea. May we never have a cold water bucket committee in Kilrea. Maybe some of you would fancy being the chairman, I don't know, but may we never have an idea like that in Kilrea. If there's an idea to improve the work, to build the work, let's put the power of prayer behind it and let's push on and build up the work. Don't be like the boys in verse 12. You'll end up being part of the problem, discouraging from within. Nehemiah had many factors, didn't he, to discourage him. And maybe you've resonated with some of those this morning and you're saying, well, you've told us about all the factors that are discouraging. Well, what's the solution? Well, very simply, look down at verse 13. I want you to see here the solution for discouragement. I just have six really quick aspects that I'll fly through here this morning. Adrian Rogers lists out these six aspects. He came up with these titles. I'll not take credit for this alliteration. But Adrian Rogers says, look at verse 13. He armed the people. Nehemiah equipped the people. Look at verse 13 this morning. Therefore set I in the lower places behind the wall and on the higher places. I even set the people after their families with what? Their swords, their spears, and their bows. The swords, the spears, and the bows. You see, if there's an enemy this morning, and we can all agree there's an enemy. We see the enemy at work in our land. You've maybe saw the enemy at work in your home or in your business or maybe even in your marriage. My, there's an enemy out there. We need to be armed. How do we get armed? You said this the last three Sundays. You've talked about the giants. You're copying and pasting again. Well, I'm going to say it till you get it. The Word of God is the first weapon that we need. The second weapon that we need is what? Prayer. Prayer and the Word. My, if we use those two things, we'll not go too far wrong. Ephesians 6:11, wherefore take unto you what? The whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil, having done all to stand. Do you know what your armor is? Do you know how to get your armor? Have you learned the weapons that God has given you to stand against the enemy? What's the other verse? The weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to what? The pulling down of strongholds. Nehemiah armed the people first. That's what we seek to do as elders in this place, to arm the people first. If I arm you, you'll be able to fight against the enemy. You'll be able to stand up against the wiles of the devil. Have you suited up? Have you got your armor on? Prayer and the Word. Wednesday night, 8 o'clock, be here. That's how you get the armor of God. Not only did he arm the people, look at verse 14, he assured the people. And I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles, and to the rulers, and to the rest of the people, be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your houses. He assured the people. He remembered who was great? God. Nehemiah wasn't resting in his own expertise, wasn't resting in his own ability, but he was urging them to remember the Lord. Don't you like that this morning? Remember the Lord. Greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world. Don't be full of fear. Be not afraid of them. God is with us. Who can be against us? The Lord is my helper. I will not fear what man shall do unto me. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. Nehemiah assured the people to remember their God. Remember our God. Why do you get discouraged? There's a lot that can get you discouraged, but maybe let me give it to you in a nutshell. You're maybe discouraged this morning because you've taken your eyes off God. You've forgotten to remember God. I've done it. Maybe you do. Keep your eyes upon God. Look at verse 14. He animated his people. Look at verse 14. And I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles and to the rulers of the rest of the people, be not afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great. And here's the animation. And fight for your brethren, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your houses. Fight for them. Remember, you're not just building physical walls, which they were doing, but you're actually building lives. You're building lives. By making sure you have spiritual provision in the walls in your home, you're building lives for your children or your grandchildren. Fight for your brethren. Fight for your sons. Fight for your daughters. Fight for your wives. Fight for your houses. Boy, Nehemiah knew how to fire up the people, didn't he? He animated them. One more time to the task, boys. Let's get this wall built. He was saying, I want you to keep everything in focus. Remember the Lord. Remember the provision. Now, let me tell you, see, in 2022, that cry needs to be made more than ever. We live in an age of, well, we know what's going on all around about us. There's apostasy, there's apathy, there's anger, even towards us as Christians, and everything that we've held dear for centuries is under attack. And we see whenever, we're not just building a work here in Kilray or some other place, but you're building for the future generations as the Lord tarries. Remember your wives, your children, your brethren, remember your homes. There's some folks today and they just don't want to get involved. They don't want to run the risk. They just want to maybe live for self and to be self alone, as if Christ had never lived, as if Christ had never died for them, as if Christ had never loved them, as if Christ had never saved them. May we never live like that. May we live as we remember what Christ has done for us. Then look at verse 15. Nehemiah applied his people. And it came to pass, when our enemies heard that it was known unto us, and God had brought their counsel to naught, that we returned all of us to the wall, everyone unto his work. Aren't you glad that we have a book before us this morning that tells us what the enemy is up to? Aren't you glad this morning that we have and we serve a God in heaven who is able, like verse 15, to bring the ungodly counsel of the world to what? Naught. He's able to bring it to naught. Such is the God that we serve. But Nehemiah applied the people because he said unto them, look, this has come to pass. The enemy's heard, it's been made known, and God has brought their counsel to naught. That conspiracy that they were at, the way they came together to try and undermine the work, God dealt with it. It's come to naught. What is the cure for discouragement, maybe for some of us this morning? Not all these will apply to everybody. But maybe the cure for discouragement for you this morning is simply to get back to the work. Just back to work. Remember, don't look at the rubbish. Don't look at the problems, but look at the provision. Clear it out. Build block by block, spiritually speaking. You might say, that burden's too big for me, Pastor. Your burdens are not too big for you. You may not be big enough for the burden, but God will make you big enough for the burden. God will make you big enough for the burden. Do you know what Nehemiah told them? He said, you put a sword in one hand, put a trowel in the other. One pastor said, you need to be building and battling at the same time. He applied the people, get back to the graft. Do you need to get back to work? Boris Johnson's telling you all to get back to work. He says you can't work from home. It's took 2 years for them to realize that you can't really work from home. Monday and Fridays are the most common days to take off in the civil service. Isn't that desperate? 3 days a week is all some of them were doing. He's telling them to get back to work. If Boris Johnson sees the picture, we need to see the picture. Let's get back to work this morning. And then I want you to see something else, verses 19 through 20. We're flying, aren't we? He assembled the people. He assembled the people. He unified them before God. Look at verse 19. And I said unto the nobles and to the rulers and the rest of the people, the work is great and large. We're separated upon the wall. We're one far from another. In what place, therefore, ye hear the sound of the trumpet, resort ye hither unto us, and our God shall fight for us. How was God able to fight for the people building the walls when God's people came together? It's as simple as that. When God's people came together, isn't there something beautiful about unity? How good and pleasant it is for the brethren to dwell together in unity. My, there's no substitute for the assembly of God's people. YouTube Sermon Audio Ministry is no substitute for church attendance. And I know it has a place to play in terms of catch up and for those who legitimately can't be among us. And God bless those folks who cannot get to church, that's what that ministry is for. Take use of it. And for those of you that do come to church, maybe I speak so quickly you need to listen a couple of times to figure out what I was actually saying. But listen again. But it's never meant to be a replacement for being in God's house and God's day with God's people. Forsake not the assembling of yourselves together. See, there's a special blessing when we come together. What did the Lord Jesus Christ say in Matthew 18:20? When two or three are gathered in my name, there am I what? In the midst. Isn't there a sense that whenever we gather together physically that Christ is present? And when his people aren't together, it's just not the same. And I know there's circumstances where people have to listen online, and I understand that and appreciate that, and I believe God gives special grace. I heard the story about a young fellow who decided to date or court a girl in a very particular way. He decided he would never meet her. Some of you may be saying he's a very wise man. But he set his eyes on this beautiful girl, but he would never meet her. He would simply write a wee letter to her every day. I wish my husband would write a letter to me. Some of you are thinking. But he wrote her a letter every day for 2 years. And you know what happened at the end of the 2 years? She married the postman. He was bringing the good news. Let me tell you this morning, folks, there's nothing like personal contact. There's nothing like being together. Where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst. Some people say to me, what's the best way to encourage your pastor? I don't like that question. But here's the thing, health permitting, be here. That's the best way. I like to see your face. Even when you smile the old time, be here. That's the best way to encourage any pastor of any place. Then verse 21, very quickly as we close this morning, you've been very patient, you've listened well. Nehemiah admonished the people. Look at verse 21. Now think of what we've just thought about. He's reminded them to remember the Lord. Think of all the provision that you have in the Lord. It's the Lord that'll fight for you. The Lord will bring all the conspiracy to naught. He'll bring their counsel to naught. I've given you the weapons. You have the weapons. But then in verse 21, he just finishes off with a wee word of warning, if you like. He warned them to watch as they work. Look at verse 21. So we labored in the work, and half of them held the spears from the rising of the morning till the stars appeared. What's he saying here? Be careful, watch out. In other words, half of you work and half of you watch with the weapons. Great principle. Didn't Peter do a similar thing when he wrote that we ought to be sober, to be vigilant, because our adversary, the devil, he goes about as a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. We have to watch. We have to be careful. And sometimes when we're so caught up in a particular work, we're so caught up in trying to build that we take our eye off maybe the dangers around about. So we have to be careful. We have to be balanced. One man said to his friend, don't let up, don't shut up, or don't back up until you're taken up. And I like that. Don't let up, don't shut up, don't back up until you're taken up. Let's keep our knees on the floor. Let's keep our face in the book. Let's not be careless. Let's not play loose. Let's stay together. Let's love. Let's believe that God and God alone can help us to build. Sam Carson wrote this in conclusion this morning. The repairing of the city walls and the gates suggests the idea of keeping the world in its place outside. When God established a place of blessing, he always put an enclosure around about it. The tabernacle in the wilderness, you can think about it like that. See, today, it's no different. There's an enemy at work. We've established that. There's many of you can be discouraged through different things. May we have to guard the gospel. We have to guard the work in this place. We have to ensure that the testimony of Christ is guarded, and so faith still has to build the wall. It goes without saying that the Lord's people need to have that exercise to build the wall, because the enemy's active to try and break it down. I wonder this morning, will we be enablers of God's work, or will we be destroyers?